Welcome to House of Comics. We're halfway through January. We've nearly made it. I'm Charlotte Henry. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Emma Bunnell. Hello.
I'm impressed by your optimism saying that we've nearly made it on the 12th of January.
Listen, we were discussing off air. I'm not a huge fan of January. It's all a bit of a bore post the like lovely chill of Christmas and Christmas lights or whatever. But, you know, 12th of January, we're doing all right. Well, we'll come to discuss maybe we're not doing all right. Anyway, we won't hang around chatting because there is a huge amount to discuss today. We have to start in the Middle East, and not perhaps where you think in the Middle East, but Yemen, where overnight, we're of course recording this on Friday morning, British and US forces have struck 16 targets in response to Houthi attacks on shipping lanes in the Red Sea. This is hugely significant for various reasons. One, because global shipping was really being deterred by the ongoing attacks by Houthi forces, who we should say are a sort of a proxy for Iran, are backed by Iran. Obviously, it is significant.
I don't know if they're a proxy for Iran. They are backed by Iran.
Yeah.
I would probably separate those two concepts.
Possibly. Yeah, I've heard people use both phrases. And so obviously there's that. We obviously have the ongoing Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza, which means the region by itself is unstable. In the north of Israel, we've got Hezbollah rockets coming into Israel, missiles coming into Israel, and a response from Israel. And of course, some Hamas leaders have been taken out whilst up in the north. So, nice, calm, stable waters in the Middle East. It's very significant, obviously, that British and American forces have taken military action. I get the sense they really tried to hold on for as long as they could, and then both Biden and Sunak have sort of had enough of this and thought they needed to send a message to the Houthi forces.
It seemed to happen very, very quickly, the final decision, because there are reports in Playbook this morning that Lindsay Hoyle, for example, was taken out of a meeting with 100 political journalists. Mm. Now, you don't do that unless you've made a very snap decision, because obviously that immediately tipped the journalists' hands as to what was going on.
Yes, there was a picture, wasn't there, that did the rounds, I think I saw.
So I don't know what it was that triggered the now's the moment we have to take action.
Mm-hmm.
But and that decision will have been made in Washington, not in Britain. They were the lion's share of the action. We only, of the 16 actions, we were involved in two, I believe, in terms of actual military force. But it is Sunak's first decision to take military force.
Yep.
So that's worth marking.
Limited and targeted, but significant nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, he's not said we're going to war, but I mean, do people ever actually say we're going to war these days? We just constantly do limited and targeted actions until...
We do. I think other places do not. I mean, I think, for example, Benjamin Netanyahu on October the 7th did absolutely use
phraseology. Declare war.
Yeah.
I mean, to be frank, I'm not sure our army has capability to declare a war on.
Well, this is a very interesting point. I've had both CNN and Sky News on this morning before we recorded, and Deborah Haynes of Sky News did make the point that there was only so much room to manoeuvre because of the in relative terms limited number of free forces.
Mm.
And she referenced military cuts as well. She did.
I mean, I think the wider question, and one that we will probably have to discuss in some depth over the coming year, is Britain has allowed its military to be run down in that way because we're members of NATO and we mm-hmm. are reliant on NATO and the NATO promise. Now, what happens if Trump's elected?
I assume what you're talking about is Article 5, whereby if one member of NATO is attacked, yeah. it means you've declared war against all of NATO, which at one point, if you remember, at the start of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, full-scale invasion of Ukraine, did get quite close. People were deeply concerned about that happening.
Well, yeah, because isn't Poland a member of NATO?
It was one of those nations. I don't want to say the wrong thing, but you may well
now Finland has joined NATO when it was, you know, never, you know, this is a former Soviet country.
Sure, and there's talks of other nations doing so. So yes, you're right. That is obviously always overhanging at the moment, given what's happening in Russia. Well, from Russia to Ukraine, we should say. While we mentioned that, Britain, you know, Britain has put a whole lot more money and backing to Ukraine. That's happened as well. So there's lots of kind of military action. Let's just return to the Middle East. So the Houthis themselves have said, not surprisingly, frankly, that they will continue in response to this to attack. They say they, I think they said they lost 5 fighters and 6 others were injured in these strikes on 16.
But they've
targets.
Also said that it legitimizes Western targets, that this is the biggest mistake the West has made.
Sure. I mean, rhetoric you and I probably could have predicted, despite not being experts in this field.
I mean, the Houthis are basically the government of Yemen now. And as such, are more of a state actor than they are than other piratical organizations. They're also backed by Iran, which means that they're a pirate group sponsored by a state, which again is quite unpiratical. But you know, essentially what I think what the West want to say is this is basically piracy.
Yes.
And we are defending our people from piracy. There's been hostage taking. There've been lots of attacks. And the Red Sea is a very, very busy shipping area.
Indeed.
My understanding, although I'm willing to be corrected on this, is that it's been more busy because there've been problems in Suez.
I will take your word for it. What I know is that 26 ships have been targeted. That's
hard
commercial.
To say.
Yeah, I'm not doing it again. these are commercial vessels we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think the big concern, so obviously, first of all, I don't think even the Houthis at this stage are stupid enough to really attack a US naval vessel, for example. I mean, there've been
haven't there been skirmishes with British naval vessels?
Yeah, there have. But not the kind of full-blown sort of piracy type attacks we've seen on commercial vessels, as I understand it. So you've got huge impact on global shipping, which has huge impacts on global prices, which, surprise, surprise, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, President Joe Biden, really don't want to see any escalations in that. We should also say the Houthis are claiming that some of their action is in response to what's happening in Gaza. And I heard Alicia Cairns, the MP who leads the Foreign Affairs Committee, being very sceptical about that claim, not wanting to give this kind of group the opportunity to set that narrative. And I think she's got a point there. I think it's a very convenient excuse, but it's not like the Houthis were so peaceful and, you know, respectful before, is it? It's a convenient
excuse.
I mean,
it's certainly ramped up since the Israeli invasion into Gaza. That is true.
Well,
I mean, just in terms of timeline.
I'm not going to let you get away with the word invasion. It's a response to a devastating terror attack.
Yes, but an invasion can be a response. I'm not saying that, okay. You know, whether it's a justified or unjustified invasion, what it is an invasion.
Okay.
I can see both sides of the argument in that thing. What happened on October the 7th was appalling, and Hamas have shown no willingness to back down from it. So what else is Israel going to do? It's going to invade. On the other hand, the way that Israel has invaded and the loss of life in Gaza has been horrific, and the difficulty in justifying that for people who largely support the action is very, very hard. That's ultimately the grey area that most of us have to live in terms of, you know, but it is, you know, if you take your troops into somebody else's territory without being invited, you are invading, whether that's a justified invasion, say, for example, the D-Day landings, very justified invasion, or whether it's not. It's just that that's the word that you use in those in that circumstance.
Okay. So anyway, the Houthis are claiming that. I think there is always a strong reason to be skeptical.
I mean, I'm not saying don't be skeptical about that, but I am saying that there is a correlation, whether it's a causation.
There certainly is. I would say that correlation is excuse as opposed to sort of moral, ideological response. But anyway, you're right. If you looked at the numbers on the chart, yeah, that is obviously true.
And they claim that they're trying to only stop Israeli ships, but that's obviously not true, or ships going to Israel. But basically, because lots and lots and lots of traffic is going through that route, that's hard to justify because it just isn't the case.
Sure.
There are bigger, I mean, basically, there are two impacts. There's the international tensions impact, about which neither you nor I are experts.
No, although obviously I've worked in the field of Middle East, I do know quite a lot about that part of the world.
Yes, but what I mean is like the dominoes, the diplomacy. Sure.
I wouldn't dare predict what happens.
Military strategy, all of that stuff.
No, I wouldn't dare predict. No, and I wouldn't dare try and predict any of it.
But the impact on the UK as a UK-based politics podcast is that prices are very likely to go up because the cost of shipping. So if they are avoiding the Red Sea, which a lot of shipping companies are now doing, they have to add 5 weeks to their journey, which will mean scarcity, which will mean prices rise, which will mean increased costs for them, fuel and wages.
Which obviously gets passed on at some point to the customer. Yes, that's absolutely right. Let me just, slightly at my discomfort, read you a little what the Houthis have said. They're basically saying it's a huge mistake. They say, quote, that US and UK will pay, quote, pay a heavy price for the and what they call blatant aggression. Now, again, you would say that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and I think it's hard to say it's blatant aggression when it is a response to, at the very least, ships under the flag of a NATO country. I don't know if specifically
which
countries, because there's been so many, have been attacked.
Quite. We should also bring it back, as you rightly point out, because we're a UK politics podcast, too, here. There's been a bit of grumbling from the Lib Dems and other opposition parties about Parliament not being recalled. Now, I sort of don't think it has to be. We've slightly set a precedent for this, that every kind of military action has to involve Parliament on one side or the other. It's very clear that we'll hear from Rishi Sunak on this on Monday. So, you know, he did all the procedural right things. You've talked about the Speaker being informed. The Labour front bench was also quite rightly informed.
Yeah, I believe that Keir Starmer and John Healey were informed under Privy Council terms.
Yes, I think, and it may be more than just those two, but they're absolutely right. They were all, the right people were. So I can't get too worked up about.
But it's just the Lib Dems, isn't it? Someone drops 50p in the street and the Lib Dems will be recalled.
Except for when there's an escalation in the post office crisis. We'll talk about that in a minute. I don't have too much more to add on this. I do think it's quite a significant moment for Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister.
Mm.
I think it's quite a significant moment in the moving pieces of the Middle East. I also hope that when we come back to the show next week, we won't have to be discussing it because something else has escalated.
It's my 50th birthday in 1 year and about 5 weeks. I'd quite like to get to 50.
Right.
So could the Middle East just chill?
I mean, we've said that for we've said it for even longer than your 5 decades on this earth. So
Not yet, Charlotte.
Sorry, babe. Right, let's return to the UK, because when I went to bed last night, I was cross because I had watched finally.
Oh, you got around to it.
I finally sat down. I was the last person in the UK to watch Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. I've only seen the first episode. First of all, brilliant.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I'm on
so
there.
So much to come.
There is so much to come, as I gather. But anyway, really good ITV drama. Obviously, everyone said all of that. My takeaway, never mind the sort of wrongs to the individuals, which has been well discussed and quite rightly elsewhere, I think this kind of stuff is so damaging because all it, I was going to say looks like, but frankly, all it is and was, is some kind of, quote, establishment stitch up. And that is so damaging to the way, to British public life, to British politics, to the sort of culture we have in this country. You know, you just become more and more and more sceptical of the things you hear and the things you read. Now, this is the post office, right? This was a what we all thought was a fairly nice, innocent, helps you get your pension and sends a postcard to your grandma kind of organisation. And yet, look at what happened.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the post office, we still have a very kind of 1950s view of it, I think.
Correct.
But actually, it's been corporatized and corporatized and corporatized. And I think in some ways, one thing that should concern people, particularly people on the left, is that similar has happened in other institutions, like, for example, the NHS. And when we get NHS scandals, that instinct to protect the corporation, protect the brand, and that's backed up where it wouldn't be for the post office necessarily, certainly for a corporation that's seen as a corporation by the left because of the left's rightful pride in, you know, Labour's rightful pride in establishing the NHS, and our very strong attachment to it as a beacon of what, you know, public services can and should be, that it will look away sometimes when actually you need to make sure that you are as hard on your own side as you are on anybody else's. That, I mean, that's just an aside.
Of course, the words that are flashing in my head as you're talking is mid-staffs.
Yeah, exactly. Mid-staffs, Lucy Letby.
Yep.
You know, there are times when the NHS gets things very, very wrong.
Let's return to the post office.
But coming back to the post office, I mean, I wrote my newsletter this week.
Yeah, it was excellent. I'll
about shamelessness. And I think this is the problem. Like, what's the point of not being shameless now? Like, what are the penalties? If you can just get through a bit of public embarrassment and go, I don't care, I've got millions of pounds. Like, why would you not do that? And like, I mean, I haven't done that, partly because there are lots of other reasons. I'm not the leader of massive organisation or the government or whatever. But more and more people seemingly are perfectly happy to take that bargain.
Mm. You're talking, I guess, or inferring about Paula Venables, who was...
Paula Venables, but other senior post office people. I mean, you know, this is something that was rife throughout the senior levels of the corporation.
So, yeah, Paula Venables, obviously, this week has, after quite a lot of public pressure, has quite rightly handed back her CBE.
But that can't be it, Charlotte. Honestly, what worries me about, oh, well, she's given back her CBE.
No.
Who cares? I mean, I signed the petition because, yeah, I don't think we should honour her. But on the other hand, it can't be the end of what happens to that woman.
Well, and also there is a whole inquiry going on at the moment. So we do need to be slightly careful what we say. There's a big public inquiry. And quite right, there should be. Because one, I don't think it all should be dumped on one person. The person at the top has to take responsibility.
Yeah.
No ifs, no buts.
I want my money back, Charlotte.
And equally, given that what looks like to have been a rife cultural thing, it can't just be you sort of punish one person and everything else carries on as it was.
Yeah, exactly. Well, absolutely. You've got to do both, but you've got to do both. I want my money back from her. I want my money back from Fujitsu. I want my money back from the post office because the taxpayers are ultimately stumping the bill for all this.
So the public...
And my money is nothing compared to what those poor
postmasters
and mistresses have gone through. I mean, it's just, I genuinely cannot think about it without getting so angry and so upset.
Oh, it's honestly, you see red when you think about it. It's Yeah, so the public inquiry is going to go on. I suspect now the outcomes are going to be much more closely monitored than perhaps they first would have. I should say, actually, as a sort of tech person, a person who writes about technology, a person who has lots of faith in technology, to have watched a major company like Fujitsu, who you would think could get things right, create a system that totally fell apart and then try to hide it as well.
Did so during its trial in the 90s.
Spoiler alert, stop.
No, that, I mean, the
I
problem
know, I'm
is, Charlotte, this
teasing.
is all public knowledge.
Yeah, I'm teasing.
And I, one aside that I would like to make, people keep going, oh, why didn't the media cover this? They
Yeah,
did.
okay,
They
I wanted to.
absolutely did. From Computer Weekly to Private Eye to the BBC, people were covering this in the press. And there would not have been an ITV drama without the work of those journalists.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it because I really wanted to make the point, particularly about Computer Weekly, because the media ecosystem at the moment is finding it harder and harder to support those kind of specialist publications, which I've written for. They're amazing publications. You become a real expert in your beat, which can be very, very specific. And it's really important that those kind of organizations it can exist. There's a media ecosystem in which they can survive, and also that they are given the sort of respect, and the reporters are given the respect that they so often deserve. So I'm pleased that in the drama they make such a point about flagging up Computer Weekly, and I'm pleased other people have sort of noted the importance of it in this whole process. So yes, I do want to mention that. We do have to go to the politics as well, which of course is, I think there is growing pressure on Sir Davey. Now, as far as I can gather, the Lib Dems are not getting too worked up about it yet, you know, not being confronted with it too much on the doorstep and that kind of thing. That's what's been my understanding of it yet. But Sir Davey was the post office minister when this happened. There is an inquiry ongoing. I don't think this is going away.
No, I think it's going to be a thorn in his side. I don't think he's going to resign over it.
No,
I
and I'm not
think
entirely sure he
what I would
should.
quite like is for him to learn the lesson not to go immediately to asking everybody in the world to resign.
Yes.
Because I think he's that, if he hadn't done that, I think there'd be less heat on him.
Well, I don't think there would be less heat to him because I think what happened was quite serious.
Yeah, but I think it's the hypocrisy.
There
I
is
think
obviously a bit
the
of that going on.
hypocrisy is quite often the biggest problem in politics. Do as I say, don't do as I
Yeah,
do.
yeah, yeah. That's always what ultimately does for a lot of people. So I think I can just imagine this. You know, we get to a 6 o'clock news bulletin during the election short campaign, and someone confronts Sir Davey
Yeah.
on the
But,
stage. I can
like,
see that
imagine
happening.
him campaigning in oh, I don't know. How about Jeremy Hunt's seat, where there is a case
Yep.
in Farnham? You know, the lead that they are, the Lib Dems are desperate to get that seat. It's a good high target for them. And so they are going to send the leader there. Now, if you were that sub post master, why would you not confront him?
Or you and a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Like I sincerely can see there being a problem. And
Yeah, in the, particularly in the short campaign, I think that there are
yeah.
going to be moments
And
like
what
that.
ha and because what always happens, of course, in those short campaigns is the Lib Dems sort of, well, not sort of, by law, must get more coverage than they ever get in normal times. And
So
so
here's an
if,
interesting question for you, Charlotte,
hit
because
me.
usually, as I understand it, that law is proportionate to where they sit in Parliament. So they get like,
And a bit of polling as well, I
and a
think,
bit
feeds
of po
into.
right polling. Okay.
I
That's
think.
okay. The polling is helpful because the SNP are currently the third
Correct.
party.
But correct by quite a significant margin.
Yeah.
So the SNP obviously must also get that, but is then there's probably an issue with the SNP not running nationally.
Yeah, that well, that's it. That's what the, so that's where I was wondering how tricky it got in terms of how they how to make decisions about how much coverage the Lib Dems would
Well,
get.
I suspect the answer is pretty tricky. And it will be influenced by polling at the time. But of course, sometimes, as we saw with the I Agree with Nick period, that these things feed into each other. But either way, it is indisputable that Lib Dems and Sir Ed Davey will get more coverage than ever happens in normal times. If there's, say, leader interviews and debates, if you're Andrew Neil, if you're Laura Koonsberg, isn't that going to be the first thing you ask Sir Ed Davey when he sits down?
I don't think it's the first thing, but I think it comes up.
I think it could be quite high.
I'm not saying it won't be high. I think the first thing is, you know, what are you going to do for the country?
Sure.
The second thing is, you fucked this up. Why should we trust you?
Trust is going to be exactly the thing. Now, we should say, Sir Davey says that basically he was misled by the Royal Mail and the Post Office.
Yeah, but honestly, why is no one asking the follow-up question of, well, how gullible were you then?
Yeah, and also, look, I appreciate the Lib Dems didn't have any experience in government at the time he was in government, but equally, you have the power of your ministry to go, okay, thank you, the Post Office, for telling me that. I'm going to meet these people anyway.
Well, yeah, and also, like, okay, that's one side of the story. Why don't I hear the other side of the story rather than writing them to say I don't think it'd be helpful to hear your side of the story?
That's basically what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. So I think there's the political problem there.
There is a really, really good book to be written, possibly from a sympathetic to the Lib Dems perspective, about how badly the Lib Dems got government and got that coalition.
Okay. We'll do another show another time on this because I don't totally agree with that.
They got absolutely, completely bound into all of the things that damaged them the most by the coalition agreement. And I mean, anyone with any real political nous could have looked at that and gone, mate, you don't want to do that. Like, negotiating hand than this. Get yourself out of that, being in charge of that ministry. Get yourself in charge of being in charge of that. Now, I'm not saying the Post Office scandal is part of that, because I don't think anyone saw it coming.
And it had started before.
The activities had started before. Most of the exposure happened between 2010 and 2019. When the court case happened, the overturning happened. But so I'm not saying that Ed Davey being a junior post office minister was David Cameron rubbing his hands together and wah, ha, 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 ha.
No.
But the way that the Lib Dems made choices of how to go into government made it, I mean, the obvious one is putting Vince Cable in charge of tuition fees. He must have known what he would go, but he didn't. Either he didn't know or he was too stupid to understand what was going to happen.
We won't relitigate the coalition. I think we can have a very interesting conversation about it heading into the election campaign, but we won't do that now. Let's return to what's happening here in terms of the fallout from the Post Office scandal, which is Rishi Sunak has, you know, the government is trying to put forward some more legislation to exonerate everyone. Now, I, in some ways, think this is another example of Rishi Sunak being an unlucky general that we have discussed before. Because now, you might argue the other way. Let me just explain my thoughts out. I think he is going to be the prime minister, rightly or wrongly, and probably wrongly, associated with the Post Office scandal, just because he's there at the time this drama has come out and it's all blown up again. And he will have to respond to the inquiry. I'm not sure one piece of legislation, which I've heard some people say might not work. Like, it all feels a bit rush and reactive as opposed to doing something comprehensive to fix the problem for those people. So that's my unlucky general bit, that he's found himself in office with yet another fussy problem that really bothers the public, or has now come to bother. Now, you could also say he's lucky because he can make this a win and say he's the one that sorted it for those people that were hit by it. You could argue that as well. I'm slightly inclined.
You can argue that.
To...
I don't see it. I'm slightly inclined to the first one. Yeah, I think there's too much anger. There's too little being done. Alan Bates is already out of the trap saying this ain't enough. The 75,000 initial payment is too small. I mean, I would have at least made it 100,000, right? I mean, it's not that much more money. and it just looks like a bigger number.
Well, it is a bigger number.
Well, you know what I mean. You put 1 or 0 on. Sure. And that's key. I'll be willing to be wrong. I don't think this impacts on Sunak as much as it impacts on other people. I think one of the things that's interesting in the documentary is that two of the key heroes of it are Tory MPs. Yep. So that's quite helpful to.
Well, Nadeem Zahawi plays himself, doesn't he? As I understand it, in a future
episode.
Which is
so weird. Like, why did they let him do? What an ego!
Apparently, he's the only MP that's ever played. I think he's one of the. I think I saw he's the only MP that's ever played himself in a drama.
What is he doing? What is wrong with the man? I mean, fair play.
That's quite funny.
I mean, it's funny, but
I mean, why not? Have a day being an extra on an ITV set. Why not? It's your story.
It's tacky.
It's a bit tacky.
I mean, he's so tacky though. Like, his publicity shot makes him look like a magician in Bridlington.
I mean, it's quite funny. Anyway, so that's where we are with this. I think the key is going to be how he responds as this carries on, because it is carrying on, not least because the inquiry is still going on, and the inquiry will have to deliver a report, yeah. I assume, before the election.
I mean, who knows with public inquiries, right? They can rumble on forever.
Sure.
I don't know what the timetable is, but I suspect that there's a certain amount of fires being lit under it at the moment.
Oh, I would think that's right. And they would really want it done before an election. But I mean, if you were the government, wouldn't you be saying like...
Yeah, but the government can't interfere with the public inquiry. That would be mental.
I mean, sure, but you can.
I mean, they're already overturning the courts, which, while I think it's on balance the right decision, I am a little queasy about.
You can certainly, in the public inquiry, set a timetable.
But the timetable's already been set. Yeah. It was set at the beginning.
Sure, but
you can ask that they stick to it, because how many of them actually do that? That I think it would be,
or expedite it.
But I just, no, they cannot expedite it, Charlotte, because you say expedite, other people say don't hear the evidence properly.
Maybe. Well, if they find it even more in favour. Yeah, I suppose, and you can't risk the post any reaction from the post office.
No.
Can we just talk about one more thing before we move on to this in the drama? Because I think you, as a connoisseur of the theatre, will enjoy my little giggle at this. What I loved is the way that the post office staff who came to investigate these local post office were depicted as like these men in suits pulling up in their black cars.
In the black Mercedes, fleet of black Mercedes, yeah.
A bit like the FBI turning up or something. That did make me giggle.
Well, I think it was, it's a very effective, I don't know how true it is, but it's a very effective way of depicting power and not power.
Correct.
Which I thought was, that was very impressive in terms of directorial decisions.
Yeah, it made me giggle quite a lot. But anyway, fantastic bit
and
of work.
And let's face it, this drama is going to win every freaking BAFTA going, and quite rightly.
Presumably so. Yes. I look forward to Toby Jones bringing Alan Bates to the BAFTAs.
What else can we get Toby Jones to do? We need to get Toby Jones to play everybody so that we can get more things sorted out.
Well, Alan Bates has been invited by Sir Richard Branson on a number of quite amazing holidays, going to Necker Island.
Given certain rumours that we will not discuss for legal reasons, I wouldn't necessarily want to go on holiday with Richard Branson.
I don't know
if it's
on
holiday. I see what he does on islands.
I don't think he's going on holiday with Richard Branson. He has been invited to Necker Island. He has been invited on a Virgin, very lovely Virgin cruise. All Costco. Anyway, so people are obviously helping Alan Bates. I mean, there was a line in the first episode that brought it all home to me. It's right at the end of the first episode where they all turn up to the meeting for the first time. Mm. And one of the characters says to the other, "We all look knackered, don't we?" And she replies, "That's because we are."
Yeah.
And when you see Alan Bates on TV now, there's still that...
I can't remember if it's the first or the second episode, but the bit that really got me was when Bates makes a speech to the group.
Oh, yes, it's the first episode. You're allowed to say it.
And he says, you know, they told us we were alone and we're not alone anymore. God,
no,
I'm choking up even now.
None of us will ever be alone. We're the only ones and none of us will ever be the only ones anymore.
Exactly. And I just thought, yeah. So what I would say in terms of Richard Branson inviting Alan Bates on all these things is that he should be inviting 700 odd people on all these things.
Well, I think there is a sort
of... And I suspect Alan Bates would say the same.
Well, I think that's right. There is a British media thing of sort of picking a figurehead, reluctant or otherwise. And I think we do need to be careful about that. But anyway, the political fallout for this is going to be fascinating to see, because I promise you this is not the last time you and I are discussing this on this show.
No.
In the meantime, where can people keep up with you, Emma?
I have a Substack newsletter at called Hard Thinking on the Soft Left. And I'm on the various social medias as Emma Burnell _.
Yeah, I can just heartily recommend reading Emma's piece on shamelessness. It really hit the nail on the head in so many ways. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Head over to theaddition.net for blogs there. You can sign up to the newsletter there as well, which is newsletter.theaddition.net. If you want to support this show, please head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast. There for about £6 a month. Think of it, you're doing Dry January. You don't need the pints. Send the money, support this show. There we are. It helps support the show. And if you sign up there, we will give you paid access to both our newsletters. And that basically is getting £100 worth of newsletter for basically £60. So hopefully you'll feel that's good value. We'll also be doing, as this grows, some extra audio content for the lovely people that support this show. And we really do appreciate it. As you can hear, Emma and I go back and forth on all sorts of things, but that's because it matters. And we believe very strongly in sort of female fronted media, because there's too many male double acts playing a bit nicely. And while Emma and I are genuine and sincere friends, it's quite nice to have a bit of a robust debate once in a while. And we hope you feel the same. So we would love you to join us in supporting this show. It really does mean a lot to us. So until
next
week.
Give us your bloody money. As Bob Geldof would have said.
Right. As Bob Geldof would have said, send us your effing money and we'll see you next week.